Well, Octav Chanute is one of those guys from the ancient past whose name you might have heard, but you don't know much about him. Turns out there's a whole bunch of reasons why you should know something about one of the most important men in Kansas City history. Octav Chanute built a little railroad bridge that put Kansas City on the map. The stockyards, he had a lot to do with that too. And something called the airplane. At one point, he was even ahead of the Wright brothers in figuring out what that contraption was all about. And yes, Chanute, Kansas is named after Octav Chanute. Historian Bill Nix is here to give us giving a presentation on Octav Chanute on Sunday at the library, and he's going to give a little one to us right now. And Bill, so good to have you here.
Well, welcome. Good morning.
And besides his history work, Bill's the former director of the Lenexa Parks and Rec Department, and he's a reenactor as well, and so good to have him here. Bill, so how is it possible that someone this significant to the history of Kansas City, our town, our area, has sort of gotten lost in the shuffle over the decades?
It is kind of surprising.
Yes, it is.
And it's kind of a shame. And when I discovered him, there's an arrogant concept, it struck me that if I don't know about him, no one knows about him.
We don't really recall him around town. Things aren't named after him.
No.
Unlike Chanute, Kansas, there's really nothing in town that would say Octav Chanute once was here.
No, we don't have a park. We don't have a room in City Hall. We don't have a room at Mark. No bridges. And maybe we start right today, starting to name something. There, Chanute, Kansas, Chanute Air Force Base in Rantoul, Illinois.
Huh.
Welda, Kansas has got a street named for him. Paris, where he was born, has a street for him.
No kidding.
So other places around the world, but...
What's your theory about why we don't?
I don't think I have a theory, except he was...
he just really got overlooked. That happened.
Lost to history. There's a building he owned at 8th and Broadway that, through tradition, has been called the Chanute Building. But it's just because he was contracted to build it, and then he rented it to the Fitz Dry Goods Company. He was a bit of an entrepreneur.
Well, let's put him on the map for our listeners then, Bill. He built the Hannibal Bridge over the Missouri River downtown. That was the first bridge over the Missouri, at least in this neck of the woods, and arguably the most important development in the history of Kansas City. Tell us about that.
It was the piece of infrastructure that made Kansas City the dominant city in the Missouri Valley. Up to that time, St. Joe, Missouri, and Leavenworth, Kansas, were much bigger cities. There's an article in Harper's Weekly magazine that calls Kansas City a town near Leavenworth, Kansas, and that the bridge flipped that equation. People thought it was impossible to bridge the mighty, treacherous, muddy Missouri
because of the current was so fast. Tremendous
current. It caused him problems. He started in 67, finally cut the ribbon on it in July 3rd, 1869. But now all the trains had to cross at Kansas City.
Mm-hmm.
Four trains had come in and dead-ended on the north side, three train tracks on the south side. You had to unload your train, ferry everything across, reload it. The bridge let you cross the Missouri in 2 minutes. You could walk across it in 5 minutes. You could take your buggy or horse across it in 5 minutes. So it really was the piece of infrastructure.
What did he do, Bill, when it came to sinking those piers into that hard current deep underwater that enabled him to build that bridge successfully for the trains?
He used caissons, and it's really a circular dike, a cone-like thing. Yes,
yeah.
And then it was lowered piece by piece with another piece put on top as it went down. So you would, no matter how deep the river was, and there were places he went through 47 feet of water and silt.
Wow.
To get to the to rock, and they kept adding sections as it went down, and then when they did get to the rock, then they would send divers down. And he patented a dredging machine on a continuous chain loop to dredge out the rock, the silt, the boulders. Once you get the caisson all the way down, then you'd send a diver down to make a little ditch around mm-hmm. it. You would put rocks against it, and then clay, and then straw, and then cover it with a canvas, and then more rock mm-hmm. and more clay. And then you were able to build inside the cone, build up the piers.
That's interesting. That's interesting.
Pier 4 was the one that really gave them trouble. It washed out more than once. Over those times, you had high water, you had ice flows.
That bridge was around for how long, Bill?
1869 to 1917, so nearly 50 years. Mm-hmm. After 50 years, better materials, better engineering techniques, a few accidents, we rebuilt the Hannibal Bridge mm-hmm. about 200 feet upstream. The Hannibal Bridge is right next to the Broadway Bridge. Mm-hmm. All your listeners can find it. You throw a rock and hit it. It's so close.
And it's still there.
Yeah. Still there. The mm-hmm. one in 1917 had two levels, a mm-hmm. Level for trains and then a level for automobiles. When the Broadway Bridge was built in 56, then we took off the top level for automobiles.
Yeah. And I think just for the sake of accenting this a little bit, you can't emphasize enough just how critical to Kansas City's future this development was, and winning the funding to build it was to what happened here. If it wasn't for this, it might have been the Leavenworth Lions instead of the Kansas City Chiefs playing in the NFL today. That's really what we're talking about here.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. And it was, there's conversation on why Kansas City and Leavenworth and not St. Joe, but really geography argues for putting it where it was built. By building it there near the Broadway to place it, you're south of not only the Missouri, but also the Kansas River. Mm-hmm. If you would have built it upstream at Leavenworth or St. Joe, you would have had to build another bridge. Across the call mm-hmm. to get south of both bridges.
And again, Octave Schnoot's the guy who's designing these construction processes to enable the Hannibal Bridge to be built to begin with.
Yeah, so he was selected by James Joy, the financier for the railroads, mm-hmm. to build it.
Did he ever live here in Kansas City?
Yes.
It sounds like he did. You said he worked here downtown.
Yeah, he lived in on Quality Hill during the bridge construction, but then he moved back in the 80s during his consulting business time, also with the railroads and tie preservation, lived on Broadway, lived on West 15th Street. He and his wife, Annie, and five kids.
Where was he born? Where did he come from?
Born in Paris.
Paris,
France. Moved to America when he was six with his father. His father was a professor, took a position in Louisiana. Mm-hmm. His mother and father did not have a good marriage. It was an arranged marriage. Father was 16 years older than his mother. She stayed in Paris with two brothers, and he came with his father. New Orleans then migrated up to New York, and that's where he had his schooling, his high schooling, and then he started working for railroads at age 17.
I was going to say, he became an engineer. How and why? How did that happen?
He was intrigued with transportation and building. When they traveled from New Orleans or Louisiana to New York, he took canals, he took railroads. It fascinated him. He went to the Hudson River Railroad at age 17 and asked for a job. They didn't have a job. They said he could start on the pulling chain. And he did that as a volunteer until, frankly, they recognized he was a good man and hired him.
Huh. In Chicago, where he also lived at one point in his life, he laid out the stockyards. He wound up doing the same thing here, Bill. Tell me about that. He was very smart about the design he chose.
Yeah, both Chicago and Kansas City Union Yards, it was just chaotic. The seven railroads were bringing cattle in and selling and shipping. And once again, contacting James Joy, the financier from Boston who financed the Hannibal Bridge, James Joy acquired the money to design the stockyard. Schnoot designed it. And really, it was to eliminate the chaos. Mm-hmm. He provided 500
cows and trains sort of intermingling with each other.
Provided 500 feet of platform for each of the trains to load and unload. He introduced the Fairbanks scales where you could weigh the whole herd, if you will, and that added efficiency. He also took care of the cowboys and the drovers, a restaurant, a bar, a stable. He wanted the railroads, the buyers, the cowboys, everybody to be organized and no chaos.
Interesting. He made other contributions too, little things, like seemingly little things, like making railroad ties last longer. What did he do? That's a big deal.
That's a huge deal. Wood preservation. He was the chairman of the American Society of Civil Engineers committee to study wood preservation. The stronger the ties, then the more stable the rails. You could go faster with your trains. You could load them heavier. Mm-hmm. You could load them to their capacity. And so by developing this wood preservation and studying the construction of rails, he was able to decrease the cost of shipping by half, the maintenance of these lines. And it was he chaired these committees, not only for wood preservation, but rapid transit in New York. And he always wanted to collect information, boil it down, and then pass out what he thought were the best ideas, mm-hmm. so that people could save time and not duplicate failed experiments. The ties, by the processes that they came up with, creosote being the best but the most expensive, doubled their length of use from 7 years to 14 years. Amazing.
He struck me as a decent man, as a man willing to share his knowledge with others, and somebody, you know, who was a decent human being.
Just go read the eulogies. Mm-hmm. No one was too small for a bit of his time. Who are these two brothers from Dayton, Ohio, that dared to write, first of all, the Smithsonian, and then the great Octave Chanute, because by that time, Chanute was the expert in aerial navigation.
Like in 1880, if I recall the date right, he writes some big book that became sort of that wrapped up all the history of humankind trying to get an airplane up in the air, a flying machine up in the air. He pulled the book together that became the Bible the Wright brothers relied upon.
Yes, 1894. That was a compilation of 27 magazine articles that he had written and published with his friend Fortnoy in railroad journals.
Where does his interest in flying come from? What was that about?
He'd always been interested, but he had to worry when he was building bridges over deep valleys and even here in Kansas City, he had to worry about wind and how it affected the stabilization of the bridges. But he was also just fascinated with flight. Bridge building helped him discover some of the secrets of sailing or tobogganing as people on the air.
And he took those lessons from the bridge right into the planes, the gliders he designed, right?
Yes, he went through a phase. He did his own glides at Gary, Indiana, off of Lake Michigan. Soft sand, no trees, sand dunes to launch from, constant winds. He went through a phase where he thought that equilibrium would be self-correcting. If you get enough springs and cables, that it would be self-correcting. And he built this Katydid contraption, is what he called it, and it had 13 wings. And it finally boiled down to three. And then at Gary, Indiana, the lower wing kept dragging the sand, so he took that off, and that became the biplane. Then he brought the Pratt truss from bridge building for stabilizing those two wings.
And he was in Kitty Hawk in the years prior to the Wright brothers actually succeeding with their first airplane. He was there with the brothers mingling and talking and doing stuff, right?
Absolutely. He was there in 01, 02, and 03.
But not in 04 when the thing
They flew in 03, but he wasn't there. He had left.
Okay.
He had left in November. They flew December. 17th, 1903. But he was an old man by then. He was 71, and it's right out on the ocean, rain, sleet. But their Orville telegraphed their sister, Catherine. Catherine's really the third Wright brother. She was instrumental in helping them. Orville telegraphed her that night that they had success. She telegraphed Chanute the same night.
Wow. Yes. He was that important.
He was very important to them. They had a bit of a falling out, but they, as I say, kissed and made up before he passed away in 1910.
Well, and the mystery as to why Kansas City doesn't recognize Octave Chanute's contributions more today will linger here a bit longer. Bill Nix is going to do a program on Octave Chanute at 2 o'clock on Sunday afternoon at the Kansas City, Missouri Public Library, the Central Branch, 14 West 10th Street. To reserve a seat, go to www.kclibrary.org. And Bill, what a pleasure to have you here. Thanks for bringing his life to our attention here.
Thank you. He's a great man.